Well, hey, church, glad to see you guys here this morning. I just want to say this before we get rolling. We got a lot of stuff going on here at Grace, and it's an exciting time to be a part of our church. I mean, just think about it, just real quick. All right, we're growing. All three campuses are actually growing, and it's not about the numbers here, you know. It's really what we're all about is reaching as many people as we possibly can for Jesus. And so here we got, all right, here at Grace, we got all three campuses at Northwood and Frema all working together for one goal, which is reaching people, okay, in Northwest Ohio. So we got that going on. We're all three campuses are making some new staff hires that we're gonna need, that we're needing to make. We got the new building happening here in Tiffin. I mean, that's looking awesome. That should open up this fall. Well, we got people giving their lives to Jesus. I mean, just this week here in Tiffin, we had that. Just a couple of weeks ago, we had middle school camp. I think there was kids from each campus that had given their lives to Jesus. I mean, there's just so much that God is doing here. And we actually have been presented with an exciting opportunity as a church. We were presented with this, I think it was back in February. I'm not 100% sure on that. And so some of the guys on staff have been working kind of behind the scenes to see if this opportunity can actually happen. And my plan is, I'm really hoping to be able to share this with you within the next week or two, maybe even next week. And so what I'm asking for you guys is just to be praying throughout this week, especially this week, that God would open up the doors for us as a church. Again, we're all about, we want to reach more people and help more people find hope and truth that they can only find in Jesus. And so we want to, that's our goal. And so if you would help us by praying that God would open up the doors that we sure seems like that are open, and that he would have that wide open so we'd be able to go through and maybe even get that taken care of this week, and then we'll be able to talk about it. And, or if God doesn't want us to do this opportunity, that he would slam that door in our face, okay? All right, and we just know, like, that's good too. We just want to do whatever's best. So could you guys do that for me this week? All right, good. And I'll know how hard you pray by if I'm able to announce it next week, okay? All right, that's how I'll know. This is just an awesome time to be a part of our church. I mean, think about it. Since Christmas, right, this is the longest series we've ever done in our history of our church. Since Christmas, we have been walking through the life of Jesus. We've been studying all three campuses together in the book of Luke. And so far in our story, Jesus has launched his movement. We've watched that. We've watched him spend the last 2.5 years traveling from town to town to town, and he's teaching people what God is actually like. And he's helping people, and he's healing people. He's doing incredible things. And word spreads like wildfire. I mean, everybody wants to see him, and everybody wants to hear him. So crowds upon crowds upon crowds of people, they all flock to Jesus, to wherever Jesus might be. And so Jesus does this again for about 2.5 years. And I mean, at this point, it might have been a couple months ago. We, at some point, it's in Luke 9, we see that Jesus shifts. Right, he shifts his whole priority. He shifts kind of his whole strategy. And the Bible tells us that, Luke tells us that Jesus sets his eyes on Jerusalem. And he starts making his way towards Jerusalem, even though when he gets there, he is going to be killed. He's going to be slaughtered, right? But he also knows that in that moment, he's also going to take care of our sin issue. And so he goes, but he's taking his time. Right, and so he's stopping in town after town and village after village as he's making his way towards Jerusalem. And so for the last couple months, we've been talking about all the things that Jesus is doing and all the things that Jesus is teaching people as he's making his way towards Jerusalem. And so one day, Luke tells us that that Jesus and his disciples, they are getting closer and closer and closer to the city, to Jerusalem, that he enters Jericho. Now, Jericho is about 17 miles away from Jerusalem, okay? So not too far away, and it's about a day's walk. And so he is getting close. And so he enters Jericho, and he was just passing through. All right, so he's not planning to spend a bunch of time there. All right, he's not planning to stay there or spend the night. All right, again, he's got this, he's heading towards Jerusalem. That's his like goal. And so he has to pass through Jericho to get there. And in Jericho, there happened to be a man named Zacchaeus. Now, if you've been in church for any amount of time, remember when your grandma used to take you to Sunday school back in the day, all right? The one thing we know about Zacchaeus is that he was a wee little man. And some of you guys who didn't grow up in church, you're like, dude, there's a bunch of freaks here. Like, what are they talking about? Okay, we'll get there. So here we got Zacchaeus. He lives in Jericho, and Luke tells us that Zacchaeus was a chief tax collector, and he was rich. In fact, he was rich because he was a chief tax collector. Now, to anybody in the first century who's either reading this document that Luke is producing here, or anybody who lived in the city, this was like two strikes against Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector, and he's rich. I mean, that would be like you're a Michigan fan and a Yankees fan at the same time, okay? Similar situation. Like, we can all identify with that. Like, nobody likes this guy is basically what Luke is trying to tell us, right? And this is an issue. Now, over the last few months here in this series, I mean, we have run into tax collectors before, right? Like, we've heard about them? Okay, five of us have heard that. Yeah. They seem to keep popping up. In fact, if you remember, Jesus is traveling with a tax collector right now, right? His name is Matthew. He actually writes an account of Jesus' life. We call that Matthew, okay? It's in your Bible. Check it out. And so Matthew was a tax collector. And these guys were hated. I mean, nobody liked tax collectors. In fact, kind of the way this would all go down is that Rome, who owned the world basically at this point in history, I mean, this was the Roman Empire, the most powerful empire that has ever been on the planet, period. Rome would go and they would conquer a nation, and Rome was just ruthless. I mean, their armies and their legions, I mean, they didn't have like a bunch of control over these guys. I mean, it was just terrible. And so they would take whatever they wanted to take, the armies, they would rape whoever they wanted to rape, they would enslave whoever they wanted to enslave, and they would kill whoever they wanted to kill. And in order to fund this army who is doing all these horrible, terrible things, obviously Rome needed money, okay, because you got to pay your guys. And so what they would do is they would tax the conquered people. I mean, think about that. So not only do you get conquered, but then you got to pay for you getting conquered, okay? You got to pay the guys who conquered you. And so to do that, they had tax collectors that would be from the conquered people, all right, who would work for Rome. And so a tax collector, what they would do is they'd actually bid to Rome saying, hey, this is as much tax as we think that we can collect. And so Rome would go, the tax collector position would go to the highest bidder. And so really the tax collector would purchase the right from Rome to take as much money as they wanted from their own people. And Rome didn't care what the tax collector did, and Rome did not care how much money they took. Rome only cared about their money. So as long as the tax collector delivered, they didn't care what the tax collector did. In fact, Rome didn't even pay the tax collectors because everybody knew that the tax collectors would pay themselves from the taxes, from overcharging the taxes that they collected. So the tax collectors would collect more than they were required for their salary as a tax collector. So as you can imagine, not the best system, because when they would get to set their own salary and really collect as much money as they wanted, and they had Rome kind of behind them as the muscle. And so not only are they working for this ruthless foreign enemy, right, but they are getting rich off the backs of their own people. Not cool, right? And so these guys have no morals, these guys have no character, they have no principles to stand by. And here's what Luke is pointing out. Luke is saying, and Zacchaeus is the chief tax collector. I mean, this dude is in charge of other tax collectors. This guy, he's got like a pyramid scheme going on. He's got other tax collectors under him, and all the money funnels up to him. I mean, he's got it made. I mean, his life is all about power and money and comfort and stuff and advancing his career, which is interesting because that's all the things that usually a lot of us are running after, right? That's what the world tells us is important. Zacchaeus has bought into that, and everybody knew him. And everybody hated him, at least all the Jewish people hated him. And so Luke, whenever he went out and he investigated and talked to all eyewitnesses, at one point, I mean, Luke talked to somebody who was there that day. Maybe it was even Zacchaeus. We don't know. And Luke tells us that Zacchaeus was trying to see who Jesus was. I mean, he didn't necessarily want to meet Jesus. I mean, he probably knew that was going to be way out of the question because he was a tax collector, okay, because he works for the enemy. He's a traitor of his country. So he probably knew that was out of the question. And he didn't really want to get too close to Jesus, all right? But like many of us, at one point, he's curious about this whole Jesus guy. He's heard the stories. He's heard the rumors. He's heard about Jesus. And so he knows that Jesus is just passing through Jericho, his hometown. And so he's like, I want to get a glimpse. But there was an issue, all right? He was not able to because of the crowd. And since he was a short man, to all you short guys out there, Zacchaeus feels your pain, okay? So as you can imagine, all right, as Jesus is walking through town, again, his plan is just to pass through. They've got people all over the place, and the crowds all gather. I mean, everybody, Jesus, he's like a local celebrity. Everybody wants to hear him. Everybody wants to see him. And Zacchaeus, he wants to as well, but he can't get a good glimpse because he is short, and everybody's taller than him, and he just can't get by. And so running ahead, what he plans to do, he comes up with a plan. He climbs up a sycamore tree to see Jesus since he was about to pass that way. Good plan, right? And so when Jesus came to the place where the tree was, he looked up, right? Now, this, I think, would have been a little awkward, right? Jesus looks up, the whole crowd of people around him, I want you to be able to picture this, and there's a grown man in the tree above him, right? Does anybody ever think about it this way? All right, this is weird, okay? This is super weird. There's a grown man in the tree above him, and once Jesus looks, what happens? Everybody starts looking, right? Like a whole crowd is like, oh, what? Who's that? Is that Zacchaeus? Like, what he's doing? Everybody begins to notice. Super embarrassing. I remember before Kate and I got married, I don't know if I was in college. I may have been a youth pastor at this point. I really hope I wasn't. I was visiting Kate. I was at her parents' house, and Kate had to, she was babysitting the neighbor's kids, okay? So we're over at the neighbor's house, and I'm just there, like, along for the ride. I don't know these kids. I don't know the neighbors. I don't know anybody. And so I'm just there kind of hanging out with Kate, and at one point, one of these kids, it was a boy, he was, like, just old enough to be a punk. You know what I'm talking about? That age? Like, he's, like, 8. I think that's, like, the age, 8 or 9. This kid, he's, like, taunting me. He's like, hey, he's got this big tree in his backyard. He's like, bet you can't climb that tree as high as I can. And I'm mature, right? Like, I'm a college kid or maybe youth pastor. And I'm like, mature. I'm like, old. I'm a grown man, you know? And so I'm like, yeah, I bet you can, little buddy. You know, like patting him on his head and stuff. And the kid just won't stop. He's like, I'm way better than you. I'm better than you at climbing trees. I could climb. This is my tree, man. This is like it's like his home turf, you know? He's like, this is my home field, my home tree. And so he's like, you know, you can't climb higher than me. I'm like, I bet you. And eventually I'm just like, well, why don't you, just to kind of get him out of my space, I'm like, well, why don't you show me how high you can climb? And so he starts climbing, and a little bit later, he's like yelling at me from the tree. And I'll be honest with you, wasn't as high as I expected. Like, after all that trash talking he did, I'm like, bro, that's it? Look it up, you know? And I'm like, dude, I could easily beat that kid. And so he comes down, but I'm not going to because I'm mature. And he keeps talking about it. Like, you can't. Now I know that I can. And so I'll be honest with you, later that afternoon, the kid broke me, all right? He broke me. And I was like, fine, I'm about to do this. And so I start climbing that tree. And my plan is not just to beat the kid. My plan is to destroy this kid and all of his hopes. And I want him crying on the ground, and I want him to run away or whatever it takes. You know, I'm like, I'm going to go as high as I can. So I climb this tree, and it's a big old tree in their backyard. But I climb, and I get all the way up to the top. Remember as a kid when you climb trees, you get, like, all the way up to the top where it's like you're on the last good branch, and it's all, like, twigs around you, and the wind's blowing you, you know, like that high? That's how high I was. I go as high as any person could possibly go on this tree, and I'm looking down at the kid, you know, like, you see this? You know, beat that, kid. And it was about that moment that I could see over their, like, 2.5-story house at that point, because I'm really high, and I see his mom pull in the driveway. And I'm like, oh, no. Like, I don't know her. She's never met me. I'm a stranger in her tree, and she probably doesn't even know I'm there. Like, I'm like, oh, no. So I start climbing down the tree as fast as I could, but it was too late, and I was too high. And she came straight to the backyard. She probably saw me down the block. I don't know. And she came straight to the backyard, and she comes up to the tree. And I'm about halfway down at this point. And she just looks up, and she just says, what are you doing? And I'll be honest, I was so embarrassed in that moment. And the kid, like, sold me out. He was just like, I don't know what he's doing up there. He's challenging me, Mom. You know, and he did something like that. But I was like, dude, that kid, I'm going to kill him. And it was just so embarrassing. And she's like, I'm like stuck in this woman's tree. And think about it, how it was for Zacchaeus. Here's Zacchaeus. He's up in this tree. This is socially awkward, like I was. This is weird. And the whole town is watching him. I mean, and here's a celebrity who's like talking to him. He's like, what are you doing up there? You know, everybody's just like, what is going on? What is Zacchaeus doing? This is embarrassing. And my guess is that when Jesus looks up and the whole town starts looking to see what Jesus is looking at, they're like, oh, there's a grown man in that tree. I bet that everybody, they all know who he is, right? Because Zacchaeus has like cheated them all at one point in their life. And so I bet everybody, there's a hush over the crowd, right? And I bet everybody's thinking the same thing. They're like, finally, oh, this is going to be good. Like, Jesus is about to, he's going to give Zacchaeus exactly what he deserves. I mean, finally, somebody who's not going to be afraid of Zacchaeus and somebody who's not going to be intimidated by him. Like, he is going to call him out. Let's go, Jesus. Do your thing. I can't wait. I've seen him talk to the religious people, all right? And when they're all messed up, I can't wait to see what he has to say to a tax collector, a chief tax collector. And Jesus looks up, and he shocks everybody, and he says, hey, Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus just like, oh, so embarrassing. He says, hey, hurry up and come down, because today it's necessary for me to stay at your house. Here's Jesus, he comes out. He says, hey, Zacchaeus, I'm actually on the way to your house. What are you doing up there? Right? Why don't you come on down, because I'm staying at your place today. And the part that nobody talks about the story is in that moment, the whole town watches a grown man climb out of a tree. And it had to have been super weird and super awkward. And Luke tells us that after he comes down, he says he quickly came down. And he welcomed Jesus joyfully. All right, and I'm sure at this point, Zacchaeus, he can't believe it. I mean, he's just like, here's this Jesus guy. He's this famous celebrity. And I've heard the rumors and stories about him doing some incredible things. I mean, he has to somehow be from God. I bet Zacchaeus has a bunch of doubts, and I bet Zacchaeus has a bunch of questions about things. Like, I don't know, but he seems like a pretty good guy. He has to be from God, who, by the way, Zacchaeus is far from God. And he's probably just like, and this guy, this teacher, this famous teacher, he wants to spend time with me? Zacchaeus is like, man, has he got the wrong Zacchaeus? Like, I'm Zacchaeus, the tax collector. Like, are you sure this is the one? Or, and he's probably thinking, like, how does Jesus know my name? I don't, you know, he called me by name, though. And he, Zacchaeus just, he can't believe it. And nobody else can either. I mean, all means all, okay, everybody there who saw it, they began to complain, saying he's gone to stay with a sinful man. I mean, all, even the disciples who are with Jesus, I mean, they're on their way to Jerusalem. They're like, all right, Jesus, are you kidding me? We're going to this guy's house? All right, they're like, what? I thought we were going to Jerusalem. Jesus, you told us that we were just passing through, right? We're supposed to be going through. Now we're taking another pit stop. Like, we're never going to get there at this rate. Like, you keep stopping. Like, what are you doing? And then the crowd, they can't believe it either. And they're just like, whoa, Jesus, what are you doing? What about us? Like, we got here early. I mean, we made shirts, we got the signs, and we bought all your merch. I brought my kids to see you, Jesus. Like I just want to introduce my kid to you. And I listen to all your talks, and I've subscribed to your podcast. Like, all this stuff. Like Jesus, no. You don't understand. He doesn't even know you. We're the real Jesus fans here. Like, instead of spending time with us, you're going to go with him? That guy? That guy who ruined my life? That guy who took everything that my mom had? Like, that guy? Like, I thought Jesus was different. You know they thought this. I mean, here he is. I always heard that he hung out with the poor people like us, the people who have been cheated like us, by the way, by that guy. But now, what's he doing? He's hanging out with the rich guy, like all the other celebrities, of course. They got their own little club going on. I mean, to them, this is, everything is so upside down. And even today, as we read this and we get the correct context of the story, it's like everything about this just seems so wrong. And some of you guys, you might be sitting here, and you might be thinking, see, that's why I love Jesus. All right, that's why I am all about Jesus. He's always hanging with the hated and the poor and the beggars and the marginalized and the oppressed. Dude, that's not Zacchaeus. That is not who Zacchaeus is. He's no beggar. He's no victim of the system. He's the man running the system. All right, he ain't getting oppressed. He's the oppressor. All right, this is the guy who's ruining lives. This is the guy who's taking what he wants. This is the guy who's gotten rich off the backs of everybody else. Zacchaeus doesn't feel sorry for himself. Sorry for what? Being rich? Having money? Having a good career, making good financial decisions. See, that's why the crowd complains. That's why this bothers them so much. See, for some reason, we fall in the same pattern of thinking. For some reason, we think that God loves us, that God's love for us is based on what we do. See, some of us in here, what you're thinking is, you think, for some reason, I don't know why, there's no basis for it, but you think, hey, in order for God to like me, or in order for God to save me, I got to make some like changes in my life. I got to fix a few things. I got to get some things done. Like I got to do some good so he forgets about all the bad. Like that's what we think, okay? That's what some people think. And there's others of us, we think the opposite, all right? And by the way, if this is us, all right, this is equally as wrong, where we think, hey, God loves me because I'm a good person. I know, like I'm a really good person at work. I'm a good dad. I'm a good mom, whatever it might be. And we're just like, you know what? I know God wants me on his team. All right. And so I'll go. Like I'm all about God's team or being on God's team. All right. And that's what we think. We're like, I followed the DARE program when I was growing up and I don't smoke that anymore. And I don't, you know, I got a good GPA and I'm responsible. And I got a job and I'm a good worker. And we think of all this stuff. But the reality is we're all on the same level playing field. Right? The reality is we are all jacked up. His love is not based on what we do or what we've done. See, some of us, think about it. If we could be so good to get to heaven on our own, then he didn't have to die for us. Right? And on the flip side of that, if we could be so bad that no matter what good that we've done, it won't erase all the bad things that we've done in our past, then he didn't have to die for us. See, Jesus wants a relationship with all of us, whether we're poor, rich, good, bad, however we view ourselves. That's why he's there. That's the whole point. That's why he's going to Jerusalem to save us. And here he is on this day. He's there to save this guy who is so lost, just like each and every one either are or were. And so Jesus goes. Later that evening, he says, Zacharias, he stood there, and he says, hey, Lord, look, I'm going to give half of my possessions to the poor, and if I have extorted or if I have cheated anybody, all right, from anything, or if I have cheated anything from anyone, he says, I'll pay back four times as much. Have you ever had anything stolen from you? Like maybe something little, maybe something big? Okay, a few. When I was in elementary school, for me, I grew up in a good neighborhood. There's a bunch of kids in the neighborhood. We all played. We had our gangs, you know, that type of thing. Fought, did all the things that kids do. And the thing that was like most important as a kid, at least in my neighborhood, was like your bike. Okay, that was your status symbol. All right, that told you how cool you were. All right, that's how you got around. Is your transportation. Okay, the bike was like, you know, you like everything was about your bike. And so I remember one day, my first bike, it was all right. All right, I think it was used. I think my parents got it at like a garage sale or something. But to me, I like was able to like fix it up. I remember putting on new grips and new tires. I like emptied my piggy bank. I like made it sweet. I spray painted the handlebars, which now looking back, I'm probably like that probably looks stupid. But to me, I was like, dude, ain't this sweet? Like silver, you know. And then I bought some pegs. I put them on all both tires, you know, like that type of thing. And I remember I was like, I took this like super average bike to like an above average bike. Okay, I put some money into it. It was cool. We'd make ramps. We'd do all kinds of stuff. Okay, like that's what we did all summer long. That was like our thing. And I remember one day, I remember exactly what I did. I set my bike in my driveway, leaning up against my basketball hoop. And when I woke up in the morning and came outside, my bike was gone. And I was devastated. All right, this was like, I lost everything in the moment of one night. It was like, no, not my bike. I'm bikeless. You know, it was like the worst position you could possibly be as a kid, at least in my neighborhood. It was like, I don't have a bike. I can't do anything. I can't walk anywhere. That's so embarrassing. I'm stuck here at home forever. I got no transportation. You know, it was that type of thing was going on. And I was just devastated. Now, you know what would have been awesome? Is if like 2 weeks later, the guy or girl, whoever, right, came up to me, knocked on my door, and said, hey, you know, I open it up, and they're like, hey, my name's so-and-so. I just want to let you know I've kind of had a change of heart. I brought your bike back. I stole this. I shouldn't have done it. I feel really bad about it, but here is your bike. I would have been pumped, okay? I'd be like, yes, I need this so bad. Like, you know, I'd be like, thank you, thank you, thank you. Like, that's how I would have thought, and I'm still looking for that person. So if it was one of you guys, bring me my bike back, okay? But that didn't happen. But what if that did happen? I mean, that would have been like a great day. I'd have been like, okay, this is awesome. Problems are solved. All of life's problems are solved for me. I got my bike back. But what if that guy came and he was like, hey, I brought you your bike back, and I felt so bad about what I did. I actually went out and I bought you another bike. Like I bought you a brand new bike. man, that would have been like, no way, like, steal my bike anytime. Like, I would have been, like, so pumped that I'm getting a brand new bike, and that's, like, everything, and it would have been grabbing, like, out there cruising the neighborhood, showing my friends, like, oh, yeah, and if I get tired of this one, I'll just go to my other one. Like, that'd be sweet. Like, that type of thing. But what if the guy standing there is, like, and I've actually, it's been, like, 2 weeks, and so I feel like I owe you kind of, like, a bike per week. So I actually went out and bought you another brand new bike. I would have been, like, 3 bikes? This is crazy. And then if he's, like, and I still feel guilty about what I did, so I went and I bought you another one, and I've been like, 4 bikes, you know, that would have been the greatest day of my life, all right, hands down, okay, that would have been like, as life as a kid, that would have been like the best day ever, better than Christmas, birthday, put together, okay, it'd be like, no way, all right, that's what Zacchaeus is promising to do here, all right, he's like, if I have cheated anybody, I'm going to pay them back 4 times, whatever I stolen from, I'm going to give that back, and I'm going to give them 3 more of what I stole. All right? That's what he's saying. All right? He's like, man, this is a big deal. He's changing. And I don't know what happened during this meal, but at some point during the evening, something changes. Zacchaeus hasn't even done anything yet. It's interesting. But Jesus sees the change in generosity, the change in attitude, and he knows that Jesus has his heart. In fact, Jesus says, today salvation has come to this house. And because he too is the son of Abraham, not just because he's a Jewish guy, all right, which he is, all right, but he is more than that. It's spiritually, meaning he's come into my fold. Like, he is one of my kids now. Zacchaeus has now become one of my sons. I'm adopting him, is that type of that thinking. And he says, for the son of man, meaning him, he says, for I have not come to seek, or I have come to seek and save the lost, which is exactly who Zacchaeus is. He was lost, just like we were all once lost. See, Jesus came to save us. That's what he's on his way to do. Take care of our sin problem. He's on his way to sacrifice himself, to die, so that we don't have to. And it's interesting, all right, because that's his whole goal, but the disciples, they don't understand it, all right? They're a bunch of 20-somethings, all right? They don't get what Jesus is doing, all right? What they think is not that Jesus is coming to fix their sin problem. They can't even comprehend what that might be. What they think is that Jesus is there to become king. They think that Jesus is there to dethrone Rome and rule as king over Israel. That's why they think they're going to Jerusalem, which is kind of like a capital city, right? That's where King David used to reign hundreds of years before. I mean, they are pumped for what they think that Jesus is there to do. And it's interesting because they think that even though Jesus has been telling them over and over and over again, hey, it's not what you think. All right, I'm going there to die. And they're like, oh, die. Okay, I don't know what that means, Jesus, but we know what you're going to do. About to become king. Right? And they're like, no. Jesus is like, no, they are going to kill me. And they're like, no, I don't know what you mean, but we know you're going to do a killer job. You know, like the disciples, like, they don't get it. And they're just like, and Jesus is like, no, you guys are idiots. Like, you guys don't get it. And as they are eating dinner here with Zacchaeus, but probably they're all still sitting there at the table. And after seeing this change in Zacchaeus' life, Luke tells us that Jesus, he takes a turn, right? He says, as they were listening to this, all the disciples were like, oh, dang, Zacchaeus is like, for real. He says, Jesus went on to tell a parable. Now, we've talked about parables. Parables are just short stories used to teach a point. He uses to teach. He says, he decides to tell a story because he was near Jerusalem, about 17 miles away, right? A day's walk. He's running out of time for his disciples to get this. He says, and the disciples thought that the kingdom of God was going to appear right away. They think, again, they're going there and they're about to get, you know, they're about to become like little governors and stuff. They're going to get this authority. They're going to be part of the inner circle of the king. Like, it's about to be sweet. And so Jesus says a story. He says, picture this, guys, picture this. And they're all at the table. Zacchaeus probably even gets to listen in on this. He says, a nobleman or a rich guy, he traveled to a far country to receive for himself authority to be king and then to return. Now, to everybody there, this was a completely normal thing. I mean, everybody understands how this goes. Remember, the Roman Empire owns everything, but the emperor, didn't directly govern every area. The emperor would have all these governors that took care of little regions of land. Okay, we do the same thing here today. And so what they would do is a guy would go, and the emperor would pick a guy to rule over a region. And sometimes these were called governors. Sometimes these were called kings. Not like a king how we would think. These are like lowercase letter kings, like lowercase K kings. That makes sense. And so these guys, these kings, would rule their little area underneath the rule of Rome, okay? And so this happened all the time back then. So they're like, okay, so this situation, he's going to Rome, all right, and he's going to be crowned king of his little area of land. Jesus says, and so he called 10 of his servants. He's getting ready to go. And he gave them each 10 minas. So he gave each one. And he told them, he says, hey, take this mina, all right, and engage in business until I come back. Basically, a mina was about, let's say, $20,000-ish. Okay, so not like a ton of money, but nothing to sneeze at either. So he gives them about $20,000 each. And he tells them, hey, I want you to make a profit, and I want you to multiply this. That's your job. Kind of like the person who does your investments or your financial planner or something like that. And so the master leaves. In the meantime, Jesus says, his subjects, right, or a lot of his subjects that were in the kingdom that he was about to rule, right, they hated him for no reason. They rejected him as king. And so they sent a delegation after him saying, hey, we don't want this man to rule over us, which is another thing that the Jewish people were very familiar with, because they would do this sometimes when the emperor would pick somebody to be their governor or be their lowercase king, right? They would go to be crowned king, and sometimes the Jewish people would send a delegation, like a group of men, that would go and say, whoa, 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 emperor, we don't want this guy to be king, and usually the emperor wouldn't even listen to him, so it was just kind of for nothing, but they would try that. And so Jesus says, yeah, that happens with this guy, right? They don't want this guy to rule over them. They want to rule themselves. And so his own people reject him. His own people want nothing to do with him. Again, just like our world and the people around us reject Jesus as their king, right? But the representatives fail, and the master gets crowned king anyway. And so when the master comes back, he says, having received his authority to be king, he summoned those servants that he had given the money to. So back to the servants. He says, so that he could find out how much that they had made in business. He wants to give an account. Okay, how much we got? He says, the first came forward, and he said, hey, master, all right, how was your trip? Everything good? You're king now. That's awesome, you know, like that. And he says, hey, your mina that you gave me before you left has earned 10 more minas, right? He's like, hey, let me do the calculations, 1,000% return on your money. Sounds pretty good, right? Okay, what are you guys sitting on? Where are your investments in, okay? 1,000%, it's okay, you know. This guy's like, 1,000%. Here's the guy, he's like, yeah, you gave me $20,000. Now I have $220,000, okay? And so I really made this work. And as you can imagine, all right, the master, he's like, whoa, well done. Which is exactly what you would say to the person, to your accountant or financial advisor, if they came and you met with them, they're like, well, in the last year, I've gotten you 1,000%, all right? What would you do, by the way, if they did that? Give them more money, right? You'd be like, okay, well, I'm going to give you some more of that to invest. I want some more of that 1,000%. And so the master is thinking the same thing, but instead of money, he gives the servant so much more, so something even bigger than that. He says, well done, good servant. Good job. Awesome. Because you have been faithful in a very small matter, right, like $20,000, have authority over 10 towns. All right, so here he gives the servant 10 talents. That's worth a lot more than $20,000. Way more. Might not even be able to put a price tag on that. And then Jesus says, the second one came in and said, hey, master, your mina has made 5 minas. And the master's like, dude, that is awesome. You did such a great job. And so he said to him, he says, hey, you're going to be over 5 times. Right? So here we got the master who's extremely generous. I mean, he's rewarding his employees. I mean, everybody's sitting at the table. I mean, remember, Zacchaeus is probably there, and Zacchaeus, he's a money guy. So he's probably like, dude, that is awesome. Okay, that's a lot. That's sweet. Okay, whoa. And maybe even the disciples at this point, as they're hearing this, they're like, they've kind of caught on to how Jesus' stories go by now, and they're like, oh, Jesus, we know how this works. Oh, I got you. Every story that you tell, there's always a God figure, okay, which would be the master or the king. Which makes sense. And they're like, okay, we get it. You're the master. We're the servants. All right, we're getting ready to go to Jerusalem. You're going to be crowned king. Okay, we understand how all this goes. And you know, they're probably thinking like, oh, yeah, so what you're actually talking about is talking about our rewards. You know, so you gave us a little, and we've done a pretty good job. We've been with you for like 2.5 years now, and now you're going to give us some sweet reward when you become king. Like, this is about to be awesome. Maybe you'll give me 10 talents. I could go for 10 talents, okay? I'm cool with that. And so, and he actually is, like, that thinking, they're actually right. But the master, what they're missing is the timing is off. See, the master went away first, and he rewards when he comes back. And then Jesus says, and another came. But this one said, hey, master, here's your mina. I've kept it safe in the cloth. The master's like, what? He says, I kept it safe because I was afraid of you since you are a harsh man. He says, yeah. I know you told us to engage in business and to, like, invest this money. But that involves risk. And I think you're kind of a harsh person. So I don't really know you all that well, but it seems a little harsh. And which he's not, because we've just seen with the other two that he's extremely generous to his servants. And he's like, so I decided just to kind of sit around and give you back your mina. And hey, at least I didn't lose it. That's good, right? Like, I got it right here for you. This is not a good employee. This would be like, you know, whoever, again, you have your investments in, coming back and saying, yeah, actually 0% for your retirement. Here's your money back, but I kept your money safe, all right? That's not good, okay? That's not what any of us would do. None of us would be pleased with that. Here's a guy who's not doing his job. He's lazy, and he just does not care. And so the master says to him, he says, well, are you kidding me? He says, I will condemn you by what you have said, you evil servant, you lazy servant. He says, if you really believed, like if you really believed that I was a harsh man, like if that was true, collecting what I didn't deposit and reaping what I didn't sow, right, what I didn't plant. He says, why then didn't you put my money in the bank, right? And when I returned, I would have collected it at least with a little interest. He's saying, hey, without lifting a finger, you could have offered me something, but you didn't do that. So he said to those standing there, he says, all right, take his mina away from him and give it to the one who has 10 minas. And even the other servants, they're like, whoa, are you kidding me? They like push back on his generosity here. They're like, master, he already has 10. And then you gave him 10 cities. Did you forget about that? And he's like, yeah, I get it. I know. And he says, I tell you that to everyone who has more will be given, and from the one who does not have, even what he does have will be taken away. He says, but bring here these enemies. Remember them? All right? He says, the ones who did not want me to rule over them, and slaughter them in my presence. Kind of takes a dark turn there at the end, doesn't it? You're like, what? Slaughter? You know? Like, what was that about? He's saying, put them to death. He's saying, give them the justice that they deserve. In which case, I bet everybody sitting at the table, including Zacchaeus, is like, whoa, okay. All right, it's kind of drifting off, but I'm with you now. What'd you say? See, what Jesus is doing here, just real quick, is he points out three different types of people. And all three, if we're honest with ourselves, are probably represented here in this room. All right? You got the enemies, right? These are the people who flat out reject Jesus, okay? There's nothing new. They refuse to give their life to him. They might be a good person. They might be a good employee. They might be a hard worker, a person of good character. But ultimately, they reject Jesus and want to live life on their own. And what Jesus is just warning them, or what Jesus is warning some of you, he's saying, hey, if that's you, man, justice is coming. When the master returns, he's going to bring justice against you. And it's rightful justice. It's righteous. It's good. It's right. And you're not going to like it, but that's what's coming. And then he has the bad servant here. And the bad servant, scholars kind of debate. Some say, no, these are actual Christians who don't obey, and so they lose out on any reward that God might give them. And then most others say that these are people who think that they know God or claim that they know God, but they actually don't. Regardless of which one it is, we don't want to be that guy. All right, we don't want to be the guy who God looks at us and says, hey, you evil servant, okay? Like, I don't know, that's not who I want to be. And so if you claim to have a relationship with God, but you aren't actively trying to obey him, and by the way that we obey him is by reaching as many people as we possibly can and sharing the message of what Jesus has done for them to them. I'm just saying, if that's not you, if you're not producing, how do you know you're not this guy? Kind of sounds like you are, right? And so you got that guy, and then you got the good servant. And that's people who obey Jesus and do his work. And that is to do whatever we possibly can to reach as many people as we possibly can for Jesus. That's us going out there into the world and convincing as many people as we can to place 100% of their trust in Jesus. And when we don't engage with people, when we don't do that, it's actually a lack of love for them on our part. See, some of us, what we all end up doing, and I'm in this category too, sometimes we care a lot more about what people may think, and we care a lot more about our own uncomfortableness than where people around us will end up for eternity, which is a lot bigger of a deal. And that is a heart issue. See, we are called individually to do whatever it takes, to go wherever we have to go, to give up whatever we have to give up, to help people find hope that's only found in Jesus. And guess what? We're not in this alone, which is really good. Like, look around. Seriously, look around. He gave us a team, right? We're all in this together. Even our campuses, even the other churches in town that actually teach, right, the gospel, actually teach about the love of Jesus, right? We're not in this alone. See, this should be the basis of everything that we do in life. We go to work to help people find Jesus. We're a hard worker at work to help people find Jesus. We serve at church to help people find Jesus. We share our resources to help people find Jesus. We are generous to the people around us to help people find Jesus, right? Everything that we do here at Grace is to try to help as many people as we can to find Jesus because time is short. And there's a pressure. You should feel some pressure to this. You should feel the urgency of it. That's what Jesus cared about. Helping those far from God connect with him. Because the reality is, he's the master. And the master's coming back. He promises that. We don't know when. We don't know exactly what that will look like. But like, think about it. We are all actively in the story right now. Weird to think about. We all are. And the master is away. And my guess is that probably most of us, 99% of us in this room, we all consider ourselves as like his servant, whatever that means to you. And the question is, which one are you? Are you the one that he looks at and says, what are you doing? You haven't done anything. You have this like really good thing. All right, I gave you the resources, I gave you these talents, I gave you all of this, and you haven't multiplied it, you haven't used that? Or are you the one that he looks at and someday will say, well done, and reward you for it? It's one or the other. Let's pray. God, we thank you for these words, and sometimes this is harsh and feels harsh and can be complicated. But God, you're trying to make it simple for us. And do this through stories, and we can see this in Jesus' actions as he goes and he pursues people who are so far from you. God, we ask that those of us who claim that we have given our lives to you, Lord, we ask that you would help us to reach as many people as we can because time is short. Help us to feel the urgency. Lord, put the pressure on us. We want to feel it. Push us to be bold and not care about ourselves, but to care about the others around us. God, we ask that you'd help us do this. We need you. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.